What Happened to Me, Part 3 by Randall Niles. For further information, materials, resources, footnotes, go to www.allaboutthejourney.org. You know, for me, the Bible was no different than the other ancient religious books. It was a mere translation of an interpretation of an interpolation of an oral tradition, and therefore a book with no credibility or connection to the ancient manuscripts, if they even existed at all. You know, before this journey began, I had no interest in reading this convoluted mythology book. However, I was really enjoying my study of archaeology, and the archaeology books kept referring to the Bible as a historical and geographical resource. So I felt the need to at least read the Bible as an intellectual exercise to, you know, help connect the dots with respect to people, places, and events mentioned in the other books I was reading. Well, I was stunned. No, really, I was. I mean, so many of us think we've read the Bible, but when it really comes down to it, we really haven't. Of course, I remembered a few of the stories and even memorized a couple of the verses, but I hadn't actually read the perennial bestseller cover to cover like a Michener novel. Well, I highly recommend it, if for no other reason than to read the most widely published and distributed book of all time. The Bible is a phenomenal account of history, comprised of 66 separate books, written over approximately 1,600 years by at least 40 distinct authors. The Old Testament contains 39 books, written from approximately 1,500 to 400 BC, and the New Testament contains 27 books, written from approximately 40 to 90 AD. The Jewish Bible, the Tanakh, is the same as the Christian Old Testament, except for its book arrangement. And the original Old Testament was written mainly in Hebrew, with some Aramaic, while the original New Testament was written in common Greek. The Bible begins with the Jewish scriptures. This is the historical record of the Jews that was written down on leather scrolls and tablets over centuries. The authors included kings, shepherds, prophets, and other leaders. The first five books are called the Law, which were written and edited primarily by Moses in the early 1400s BC. Thereafter, other scriptural texts were written and collected by the Jewish people during the next 1,000 years, and about 450 BC, the Law and the other Jewish scriptures were arranged by councils of rabbis, who then recognized the complete set as the inspired and sacred authority of God. At some time during this period, the books of the Hebrew Bible were arranged by topic, including the Law, the Prophets, and the Writings. Beginning as early as 250 BC, the Hebrew Bible was translated into Greek by Jewish scholars at Alexandria, Egypt. This translation became known as the Septuagint, meaning 70, and referring to the tradition that 70 men comprised the translation team. It was during this process that the order of the books was changed to the order we have today. The historical, which would be the Genesis to Deuteronomy, the poetic, which is Job to the Song of Songs, and the prophetic, Isaiah to Malachi. And although the Jewish scriptures were copied by hand, they were extremely accurate copy to copy. The Jews had a phenomenal system of scribes who developed intricate and ritualistic methods for counting letters, words, paragraphs to ensure that no copying errors were made. These scribes dedicated their entire lives to preserving the accuracy of the holy books. A single copy error would require the immediate destruction of the entire scroll. In fact, Jewish scribal tradition was maintained until the invention of the printing press in the mid-1400s AD. And as far as manuscript accuracy, the recent discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls has confirmed the remarkable reliability of this scribal system over thousands of years, and we'll get back to the Dead Sea Scrolls later. Well, anyway, after approximately 400 years of scriptural silence, Jesus arrived on the scene in about 4 BC. And throughout his teaching, Jesus often quotes the Old Testament, declaring that he did not come to destroy the Jewish scriptures, but to fulfill them. In the book of Luke, Jesus proclaims to his disciples, "All things must be fulfilled which were written in the Law of Moses and the Prophets and the Psalms concerning me." And then starting in about 40 AD and continuing until about 90 AD, the eyewitnesses to the life of Jesus, including Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, James, Peter, and Jude, wrote the Gospels, the letters, the books that became the Bible's New Testament. These authors quote from 31 books of the Old Testament and widely circulate their material, so that by about 150 AD, early Christians were referring to the entire set of writings as the New Covenant. During the 200s AD, the original writings were translated from Greek into Latin, Coptic in Egypt, Syriac in Syria, and widely disseminated as inspired scripture throughout the Roman Empire and beyond. And then in 397 AD, in an effort to protect the scriptures from various heresies and offshoot religious movements that were arising, well, the current 27 books of the New Testament were formally and finally confirmed, canonized, in the Synod of Carthage in 397 AD. Well, I was genuinely surprised. I mean, I really thought the Bible, it was a great read. It had exciting stories, war strategy, foreign intrigue. I mean, what else could anyone want from an ancient religious book? But come on, what about its credibility as a history book? I mean, what about all the changes made to the Bible over the centuries and all those interpretations and interpolations of the oral tradition along the way? I mean, at best, how can I read the Bible as anything but a fun novel? Well, the first thing I discovered was a common misunderstanding about interpretations and translations. I mean, yes, the Bible has been translated from its original languages, but it has not been changed, interpreted, or interpolated along the way. Translations such as the King James Version, they're derived from existing copies of ancient manuscripts. The Hebrew Masoretic Text for the Old Testament and the Greek Textus Receptus for the New Testament. Today's Bibles are not translations of texts translated from other interpretations. They go right back to the ancient source manuscripts. The primary differences between today's Bible translations are merely related to how translators interpret a word or sentence from the original language, Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. This is no different than any other book we read in English that was translated from a different source language. Dramatically, when the Bible is compared to other writings, it stands alone as the best-preserved literary work of all antiquity. Remarkably, there are thousands of existing Old Testament manuscripts and fragments copied throughout the Middle East, Mediterranean, and European regions that agree phenomenally with each other. In addition, these texts, they substantially agree with the Septuagint version of the Old Testament, which was translated from Hebrew to Greek sometime during the 3rd century B.C. The Dead Sea Scrolls, discovered in Israel in the 1940s and 50s, also provide astounding evidence for the reliability of ancient transmission of the Jewish scriptures. In the 1st, 2nd, 3rd centuries B.C. in this case, too. The manuscript evidence for the New Testament is also dramatic, with nearly 25,000 ancient manuscripts discovered in archives so far, at least 5,600 of which are copies and fragments in the original Greek. Some manuscript texts date to the early 2nd and 3rd centuries, with the time between the original autographs and our earliest existing fragment being a remarkably short 40 to 60 years. Interestingly, this manuscript evidence far surpasses the manuscript reliability of other ancient writings that we trust as authentic every day. And look at these comparisons. Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars, we've got 10 manuscripts that remain, with the earliest one dating to 1,000 years after the original autograph. Pliny the Younger's Natural History, 7 manuscripts with 750 years elapsed. Herodotus' History, 8 manuscripts, 1,350 years elapsed. Plato, we only have 7 manuscripts with 1,300 years separating us from the original autograph. Tacitus, 20 manuscripts, 1,000 years. Renowned Bible scholar F.F. Bruce, he finally declared, "There is no body of ancient literature in the world which enjoys such a wealth of good textual attestation as the New Testament." Homer's Iliad, the most renowned book of ancient Greece, is the second best preserved literary work of all antiquity, with 643 copies of manuscript support discovered to date. In those copies, there are 764 disputed lines of text, as compared to 40 lines in all the New Testament manuscripts. In fact, many people are unaware that there are no surviving manuscripts of any of William Shakespeare's 37 plays written in the 1600s AD, and scholars have been forced to fill gaps in his works. This pales in textual comparison with over 5,600 copies and fragments of the New Testament in the original Greek that together assure us that nothing's been lost. In fact, all of the New Testament except 11 minor verses can be reconstructed outside the Bible from the writings of the early church leaders in the 2nd and 3rd centuries AD. The academic discipline of textual criticism assures us that the Bible translations we have today are essentially the same as the ancient manuscripts, with the exception of a few inconsequential discrepancies that have been introduced over time through copyist error. We must remember that the Bible was hand-copied for hundreds of years before the invention of the first printing press. Nevertheless, the text is exceedingly well-preserved. Again, you know, I pondered this. Of the approximately 20,000 lines that make up the entire New Testament, only 40 lines are in question. These 40 lines represent 0.25% of the entire text and do not in any way affect the teaching and doctrine of the New Testament. I again compared this with Homer's Iliad, and of the approximately 15,600 lines that make up Homer's classic, 764 lines are in question. And these 764 lines, they represent over 5% of the entire text, and yet nobody seems to question the general integrity of that ancient work. To my real surprise, I discovered the Bible to be better preserved by far than other ancient works I've read and accepted over the years, such as Homer, Plato, and Aristotle. As far as my interpretation of an interpolation of an oral tradition theory, I found that the Bible was not changed or interpreted from the ancient source text. Simply, as the Bible was carried from country to country, it was translated into languages that don't necessarily mirror the original languages of Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic. However, other than some grammatical and cultural differences, the Bible is absolutely true to its original form and content, and remarkably well preserved in its various translations. I must say, I really enjoyed reading the Bible as a history book, and now that I was secure in its translation integrity, I really dug in and absorbed its presentation of the ancient world. The Bible appeared much different than the other holy books I was perusing, which seemed to focus on philosophy and notions of transcendentalism, and the writers of the Bible seemed to have a solid grasp on the people, places, and events of history. Smack! I had another one of those wait-a-minute moments. What about those scholars that discredit the historical veracity of the Bible based on a lack of archaeological evidence for the various civilizations, cities, and leaders mentioned in the Old Testament? In my archaeology studies, these academics seemed to pop up from time to time, and I have to say they sounded pretty credible. I decided to retreat a bit from the Bible, and I went back to my archaeology books. Well, one of the most revealing things about studying archaeology is realizing that the scientific discipline itself really didn't exist until about 150 years ago. Archaeology wasn't even a soft science until the 19th century. I mean, it was merely treasure hunting conducted by self-seeking opportunists. So therefore, many excavations, they were botched, many discoveries were lost. But with the rise in academic interest and the proliferation of technological tools, a systematic approach to archaeology has taken off in the last century, revealing a great deal about the ancient world. So what have they discovered about Old Testament times? Well, since I was always trying to reconcile ancient maps with today's maps, I decided to start looking at the archaeological evidence for the cities and civilizations mentioned in the Bible. How about the early cities of Abraham and the patriarchs? Did they really exist? Abraham's ancestral home of Ur is presented as a powerful city-state in southern Mesopotamia. It's mentioned 4 times in the Old Testament. Well, it turns out Ur is located in modern Iraq. And depending on strife in the region, it's been excavated on and off during the last century, exposing a wealth of information about the pagan culture of Abraham's time. In the book of Genesis, Abraham's father, Terah, moved his family north to Haran, and this ancient city has been discovered and excavated in modern-day Turkey. Also found in that same area of Turkey are villages that still have the names of Abraham's grandfather and great-grandfather, Nahor and Sarah. To date, numerous sites and artifacts have been uncovered that reveal a great deal about the ancient Mesopotamian culture. One of the most dramatic finds is the Sumerian King List, which dates to approximately 2100 BC. This collection of clay tablets and prisms is most exciting because it divides the Sumerian kings into 2 categories, those who reigned before the Great Flood and those who reigned after it. Actually, records of a global flood, they're found throughout most ancient cultures. For instance, the Epic of Gilgamesh from the ancient Babylonians contains an extensive flood story. It was discovered on clay tablets in locations such as Nineveh and Megiddo. The epic even includes a man who built a great ship, filled it with animals, and used birds to see if the water had receded. Archaeology in the last century has also shed light on the great military civilizations of ancient Mesopotamia and their ultimate impact on law and culture throughout the region. One significant find is the Law Code of Hammurabi, which is a 7-foot-tall black diorite carving, black stone carving, containing about 300 laws of Babylon's King Hammurabi. It's dated to about 1750 BC. The Law Code contains many civil laws that are similar to those found in the first 5 books of the Bible. Another dig at the ancient city of Nuzi, near the Tigris River, uncovered approximately 20,000 clay tablets. Dated between 1500 and 1400 BC, these cuneiform texts explain the culture, customs, and laws of the time, many of which are similar to those found in the early books of the Bible. As far as major ancient empires, the Hittite civilization is mentioned throughout the Old Testament as ruling the area of present-day Turkey, Syria, and Lebanon. Yet nothing was known of these people outside the Bible. About 100 years ago, ancient Boghatskoye was discovered east of Ankara, Turkey, which revealed itself as the expansive capital city of the Hittite Empire. Well, since then, archaeologists have uncovered a wealth of information about the history, language, and culture of people considered imaginary by many scholars until the 1900s. The Bible tells us a great deal about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire, which destroyed Jerusalem in 586 BC and exiled the Jews to Babylon for 70 years. Well, ancient Babylon has now been uncovered, comprising nearly 3,000 acres, about 55 miles south of current-day Baghdad in Iraq. The ruins include the famous ziggurat structures, the palace of King Nebuchadnezzar, and the enormous walls that measure 80 feet thick, which is wide enough to allow a four-horse chariot to make a full turn on the top of the wall. The Philistines were known as one of the sea peoples that constantly warred against the Israelites for control of early Canaan. Mentioned over 200 times in the Old Testament, the Philistines had a major fortified seaport at Ashkelon on the Mediterranean Sea, which was discovered just north of present-day Gaza. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Ashkelon in 604 BC, as predicted by Jeremiah and other Old Testament prophets. You know, I was really impressed. Call me totally naive, but I had no idea that all these places mentioned in the Bible truly existed. So I dug in more. So since I was looking at the ancient cities and cultures mentioned in the Bible, I guess the ones with the ultimate significance would be those related to ancient Israel. So that's where I focus next. Well, mentioned more than 50 times in the Bible, Jericho was the initial entry point into the promised land for the Israelite people. Archaeology has now confirmed the location of this fortified city of walls and towers, the guarded entry to the land of Canaan from the east. Shechem was also an important city throughout the Old Testament. In fact, King Jeroboam made it the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel in the 10th century BC. Excavations have uncovered huge walls and a fortified gate system containing such important finds as the Temple of Baal from the biblical story of Abimelech. Well, excavations in the north have also revealed the city of Dan, which was a Canaanite stronghold conquered by Israel, specifically the tribe of Dan, around 1150 BC. The rebuilt city, which became the northern boundary of Israel, has delivered a wealth of artifacts with biblical importance. The southern boundary of Israel was Beersheba, which became a fortified city during the period of King Solomon. And excavations between 1969 and 1976 have revealed massive walls, gates, wells, storehouses, all consistent with the biblical accounts. The ancient city of Jerusalem, dating to the time of King David's initial conquest, was discovered and excavated between 1978 and 1985. And prior to this time, nothing apart from the Bible was known about King David's Jerusalem, which has now revealed a palace, towers, and the famous Siloam Spring. The ancient ruins of Gibeah were discovered about 3 miles north of Jerusalem, and Gibeah was the home to Saul and the tribe of Benjamin, and later became King Saul's capital city. And excavations have revealed Saul's fortress palace dated to about 1100 BC. And Megiddo was a Canaanite city conquered by Israel in the north. It was a walled fortress that sat on a hill near an expansive plain that witnessed many battles of historical significance. In the 900s BC, King Solomon fortified the city, and later in 600s BC, King Josiah lost a battle to the Egyptians there. And Megiddo, which is also known as Armageddon, has now been extensively excavated, revealing such treasures as the Canaanite religious high places mentioned throughout the Old Testament. Well, you know, I was never disappointed. I found that the archaeological evidence for the ancient cities mentioned in the Bible was absolutely compelling. Okay, but what about the evidence for the ancient Israelites themselves? I mean, some scholars propose that the ancient Canaanites existed in these cities, but the Israelites didn't come on the scene until centuries after the Bible declares. So I continued my exploration. The Merneptah Stele, also known as the Israel Stele, it's this upright stone slab measuring over 7 feet tall that contains carved hieroglyphic text dating to approximately 1230 BC. And this Egyptian monument describes the military victories of Pharaoh Merneptah and includes the earliest mention of Israel outside of the Bible. And although the specific battles covered by the stele are not included in the Bible, the stele establishes outside evidence that the Israelites were already living as a people in ancient Canaan by 1230 BC. In addition to the stele, It was a large wall picture that was discovered in the great Karnak Temple of Luxor. This is ancient Thebes, which shows battle scenes between Egyptians and Israelites. And these scenes have also been attributed to Pharaoh Merneptah and date to approximately 1209 BC. The Karnak Temple also contains records of Pharaoh Shishak's military victories about 280 years later. Specifically, the Shishak relief depicts Egypt's victory over King Rehoboam in about 925 BC, when Solomon's temple in Judah was plundered. This is the exact event mentioned in two books of the Old Testament. Outside Egypt, we also discover a wealth of evidence for the early Israelites. The Moabite stone, also known as the Mesha stele, is a 3-foot stone slab discovered near Dabon, east of the Dead Sea, that describes the reign of Mesha, king of Moab, around 850 BC. And according to the book of Genesis, the Moabites were neighbors of the Israelites. And this stele covers victories by King Omri and King Ahab of Israel against Moab, and then Mesha's later victories on behalf of Moab against King Ahab's descendants. The black obelisk of Shalmaneser is a 7-foot, 4-sided pillar of basalt that describes the victories of King Shalmaneser III of Assyria, including defeats of Tyre, Sidon, and Jehu, son of Omri, in Israel. Dated to about 841 BC, the obelisk, now in the British Museum, was discovered in the northwest palace of Nimrud, and it shows Israel's King Jehu kneeling before the Assyrian king in humble tribute. Okay, everything I found establishes that the ancient Israelites did in fact exist. However, there's a big difference between historic generalities and the specific people and events mentioned in the Bible. For instance, King David and his son Solomon are huge parts of Jewish history in the Old Testament. Shouldn't we find archaeological support for their reigns and activities as well? In one of the books I picked up, I was surprised to read that the historical David never existed. Another article I read referred to the well-established David myth, a literary invention drawn from heroic tradition to establish the Jewish monarchy. Kathleen Kenyon, a very credible archaeologist I really came to trust and enjoy when I was reading, she declared, "To many people it seems remarkable that David and Solomon still remain unknown outside the Old Testament, or literary sources derived directly from it. No extra-biblical inscription, either from Palestine or from a neighboring country, has yet been found to contain a reference to them." Well, I guess we don't have to find archaeological evidence for every person and place mentioned in the Bible, but David was huge to me. I mean, I discovered he's mentioned 1,048 times in the Bible. He's the subject of 62 chapters, the writer of probably 73 Psalms in the Old Testament. Boy, I really wanted to see some evidence for that guy. Well, guess what? Since Kenyon made the statement I just read in roughly 1987, the validity of the ancient biblical record regarding King David received a huge lift. In 1993, archaeologists discovered a stone inscription at the ancient city of Dan, which refers to the House of David. The House of David inscription, also known as the Tel Dan inscription, is the first ancient reference to King David outside the Bible. Specifically, the stone is a victory pillar of a king in Damascus, dated a couple hundred years after David's reign, which mentions a king of Israel of the House of David. Over the next year, more inscription pieces were discovered at the site, which allowed archaeologists to reconstruct the entirety of the declaration. Quote, "I killed Jehoram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, and I killed Ahaziah, son of Jehoram, king of the house of David." Remarkably, these are Jewish leaders linked to the lineage of David as recorded in the Bible. It just goes on and on, event after event, reference after reference. The biblical record of history never disappointed me. The defeats of Samaria at Ashdod to Sargon II, king of Assyria, is recorded on his palace walls. The military campaign of the Assyrian king Sennacherib against Judah is recorded in the Taylor Prism. The siege of Lachish by Sennacherib as recorded on the Lachish reliefs. The destruction of Nineveh is predicted by the prophets Nahum and Zephaniah as recorded on the tablet of Nabopolassar. The defeat of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is recorded in the Babylonian Chronicles. The Babylonian captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, is recorded in the Babylonian Ration Records. The defeat of Babylon by the Medes and Persians is recorded on the Cyrus Cylinder. The freeing of the Jewish captives from Babylon by Cyrus the Great is recorded on the Cyrus Cylinder. The palace at Jericho, where Eglon, king of Moab, was assassinated by Ahab. the east gate of Shechem, where Gaal and Zebul watched the forces of Abimelech approach the city, the temple of Baal in Shechem, where the citizens of Shechem took refuge when Abimelech attacked the city, the pool of Gibeon, where the forces of David and Ishbosheth fought during the struggle for the kingship of Israel, the royal palace at Samaria, where the kings of Israel lived, the pool of Samaria, where King Ahab's chariot was washed after his death, the water tunnel beneath Jerusalem dug by King Hezekiah to provide water during the Assyrian siege, the royal palace in Babylon, where King Belshazzar held the feast and Daniel interpreted the handwriting on the wall, the royal palace gate and square at Susa, where the events of Esther, the queen to the Persian king Xerxes, and Mordecai, her cousin, took place. I mean, wow, only a century and a half ago, European academics in the Age of Enlightenment declared the Bible, especially the Old Testament, it was fiction. Their primary rationale was that the empires such as the Hittites and kings such as David didn't really exist. Well, now we have dramatic archaeological support for their existence. Moreover, in recent years, the archaeological finds have increased dramatically. Therefore, if the rationale for rejecting Old Testament scripture was lack of corroborating historical and archaeological evidence, shouldn't the same rationale exist for validating the Old Testament record now that we're finding such evidence? Although the general strife in the Middle East has slowed archaeological endeavors somewhat, the Bible's reliability as a historical document continues to be confirmed by the field of archaeology every day. Although absence of archaeological evidence does not necessarily mean absence of the people, place, or event, it may be stated emphatically that no archaeological discovery has ever refuted a biblical reference. Dr. Nelson Gluck, probably the greatest modern authority on Israeli archaeology, he said, quote, "No archaeological discovery has ever controverted a single biblical reference. Scores of archaeological findings have been made which confirm in clear outline or exact detail historical statements in the Bible. And by the same token, proper evaluation of biblical descriptions has often led to amazing discoveries." End quote. Well, for me, this was really becoming an unexpected and exciting journey. Well, that's the end of part 3 of What Happened to Me by Randall Niles. Please go to www.allaboutthejourney.org for any footnotes, materials, or other sources. And please listen to part 4 of What Happened to Me by Randall Niles.